Hello, so I'm here with Sean Doran and Liam Brown of Arts Over Borders to talk about Ulysses European Odyssey, an incredible programme of artistic and cultural work which has been taking place across Europe since 2022, involving 18 cities in 16 countries, inspired by James Joyce's Ulysses. I'm sure they'll be able to tell us a bit more about what that means, so let's kick off. So, Sean, Liam, can you just tell us a bit about, you know, who you are, what Ulysses European Odyssey is about, and how it came about, why it came about, and what it involves?
Sean here. In 2019, so 3 years ahead of the centenary of the publication of James Joyce's Ulysses, Liam and I looked up and saw that, you know, the centenary will be big in Ireland, but how taken up will celebrations of this book be in Europe? And mostly to note by that, because Joyce lived in Europe while he wrote the entirety of the book, even though it was about Dublin, in its entirety, he wrote it in Trieste, Zurich, and Paris across 7 years or so. And then it was published in 1922. So we saw that opportunity, and Joyce was really analytical and detailed, extremely so. And he gave us the schema that he created as the blueprint to his book, and it was 18 episodes, and like a thunderbolt, 18 cities across Europe came into our head. I mean, there was immediate ones, of course, because Trieste, Zurich, Paris, there's three cities that he wrote it in, Dublin, a fourth city, and then in the episode one, he talks about Athens, Liam, isn't that right, with the students on the Martello Tower, let's go to Athens, let's Hellenize Ireland.
It's worth sort of in terms of going back to the work that we had done as part of Arts Over Borders. We had run a Samuel Beckett festival for 10 years in Enniskillen, where Beckett went to school. And it was a multi-arts response to Beckett's life and work. And that concept of taking the work of an artist or an individual artwork. So, for example, in 2017, Culture Liverpool asked us to curate a response to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album. We also curated a festival marking the centenary of The Wasteland, Eliot's great poem, 22 churches across the centre of London. So that concept of taking an artist or a work and then just opening it out is something that had always fascinated us. So from that point of view, when we started thinking about the centenary, about Joyce and Ulysses, our first thought was, what can we do that's different? What can we do that will kind of open the novel out into new perceptions of it, new engagements with it, and that's where really this project came from. And also, we were particularly interested in the European dimension. As Sean said, we knew there was going to be plenty happening in Ireland to mark the centenary, but we didn't know what might be happening across Europe, and that's what interested us. And Joyce as a European figure, this is a man who, you know, as a young man living in Dublin, great love of Ibsen's work. Not that many people would have known Ibsen at that time, but it was typical of him. He was engaged in Europe rather than just in Ireland.
Yeah, and the model of the festival, Liam, is something that has really kind of fed us, that we came up with. We kind of give it this academic name, Bio Festival, but it plays true, it describes it truly, in that previous to when we started working together really intensively on the Beckett Festival, as Liam described, and others, Wild Festival and Brian Friel, you know, in Ireland and now expanding out across Europe with Ulysses, we had done festivals in the traditional sense of where you program any artist that's on your wish list or you feel would be interesting, and we became a little bit disillusioned on that format. It's quite tired. It's been a 20th century format since the Edinburgh Festival, Salzburg, and so on and so forth. Because it doesn't test us enough, we felt, and we preferred then this model to elect an individual or an artwork that's associated with place, because this takes us into much more site-specific thinking. And it's a blank sheet we then start with. And then when you read the work and read about the writer and their lives or any other artist, if it were, it starts taking you in directions that you wouldn't have imagined yourself. And therefore you get out of the bed in the morning and you don't quite know where this whole journey is going to lead you to. And that's exactly what's happened with the model applied to the Ulysses European Odyssey and the 18 partner organizations, museums, festivals, visual artists, filmmakers, all coming together. They enrich what we do. It's not us doing from beginning to end as we would have possibly have done in a traditional festival format previously.
And we've always been open to surprise and mystery, and that has been very much the case of this project. We didn't know quite what we were stepping into. We were meeting partners for the first time. We didn't know what sort of work they would produce as part of the project. And I mean, it's been a wonderful revelation. But going back to those early days, we didn't know what to expect. And we didn't know how potential partners would respond also to the idea, because it was so different. It's interesting also that we probably didn't pay much attention to it at the time, but you think of that when we started to consider the project and the idea of celebrating Joyce's centenary, it was after the UK had their Brexit vote. The government there was trying to sort of separate itself from Europe, and coming out of that was a whole reconsideration of what it was to be European. Is there such a thing as European values? And that probably fed into our thinking as well. Being both pro-European, we wanted to celebrate Europe. And this project seemed a way in which we could do it, and in a way in which we could connect with European organizations and individuals in a very practical way, which was not, of course, so easy then in terms of the boundaries that were being drawn.
So we've got the sense of Joyce being a European writer, and the fact of wanting to kind of go across the whole of Europe. Just tell us a bit about how you identified the countries, why, and also how they sort of reflect the themes within Ulysses itself, and how you kind of came about developing the themes which you have for the project itself. Ulysses is a notorious as a difficult proposition to read. And what you've done is seem to have developed a program where even for people who've read Joyce, they might kind of go, how does that connect to those themes? Which I think is really exciting, but it'd be interesting to know how you came about that, what the countries are, what the cities are, etc.
Yeah, I mean, an important point to make, actually, which always can be sort of overlooked, is that we weren't inviting any of the partners to create renditions of the episodes or what happens in the book itself. This is what surprises, I think, others outside of the project. And we were saying to them, the Ulysses is actually a starting point. It's the end point where you take it to responding to the episode any which way you choose, and it can have little or no trace of the Ulysses at all in whatever you create. Just similarly to, we took this leaf from Joyce himself, as he did with the Homer. Anybody who doesn't really know the Homer's Odyssey, which Joyce knew inside out, won't see those in the 18 episodes, whereas someone who does would actually pick up a lot of kind of hidden references and traces of the Homer. And it wasn't so much countries either that we were seeking across Europe. It was cities, first and foremost. And it did eventuate, 18 cities for 18 episodes, because each of the Joyce episodes are mini universes in themselves. That's the great thing as well. It's a through-going plot, as it were, you know, of three protagonists and others. And it's a story that you can follow, apart from that, where the language sort of gets more opaque. Each episode is an entirety of itself. And the cities then appeared quite quickly. The four, of course, where the book was written and about, Trieste, Zurich, Paris, Dublin. Athens for episode one, in the Homer and Wandering Rocks. Istanbul is mentioned. Stephen Dedalus, one of the protagonists of the book, in episode 9 in the National Library in Dublin, prepares and gives a lecture on Hamlet. So that took us to Copenhagen. So there's a small set immediately that were, let's say, were obvious, a third of the cities. And then others, you know, were maybe a little bit more quirky, how we find ourselves there. For Spain, for example, we happened upon Lugo in Galicia because of the food episode, the Laestrygonians in the Ulysses, and where Bloom, walking about, sits down, cuts up a gorgonzola sandwich into little bits and has a glass of burgundy. So the little bits obviously immediately had us visualize tapas or pinxos.
And also, we were very determined that it wasn't going to be some sort of dusty response to the centenary. You know, this is a book that was 100 years old. If you believe that great art is timeless, then you're saying that, in a sense, it is always contemporary. So if that's the case, how is Ulysses contemporary for a European readership and audience today? One of the ways we looked at that was to identify contemporary themes within each of the episodes that we felt were very, very relevant today. So issues such as migration, gender freedom, mental well-being, they're all there. They're all in the novel. So we then linked a particular theme to a particular city or a particular organization, which was a way of engaging with Europe today. And as Sean said, Ulysses can just kind of almost sit to the side. It doesn't have to be center stage. It's what the partners do. It's what their public event is, how they engage with their contemporary theme. Ulysses sits there and makes lovely little connections, but we weren't trying to sort of mark each single episode in any sort of prosaic, realistic way.
And just in case, I mean, Liam and I are very conscious of this, that we come across as nerds or terribly informative and analytical over so as anybody, you know, a general listener would expect when it comes to Ulysses. Well, Joyce himself is to be blamed and credited for that, not Liam or I. And we should reveal that lots of what we've been talking about that leads us to the cities and the themes where we create word clouds and so on from the various episodes, Joyce created this schema himself. It's quite an extraordinary, complex sort of tableau where he, you know, 1 to 18 in the Roman numerals of his episodes, as he called them, and then the chapters or books of the Homer, Telemachus, number 1, through to Penelope, number 24. Then he goes from 8 a.m. on June the 16th, gives it one day, which was extremely novel. At that point, he was the first, I think, essentially to do that, although that might be contradicted. It's certainly successfully to do it from 8 a.m. in the morning to 2 the following morning. The 18 episodes move through the scenes of the Dublin. And then he creates a sort of a list of emotions for each episode and a list of symbols for each episode and parts of the body for each episode. So that got us going, you know, just creating the equivalents of 18 cities and then getting the cities to look at the public spaces and their places. And then the times of the day, we turn into months across a 2-year period. And then we take these things of word clouds out of each episode, which led us to crystallizing each episode. For example, episode 1, it's youth, citizenship, and democracy. We gave Athens, our partner Onassis Stege, and episode 4, where Bloom appears, Calypso. We set that in Budapest because this is where Bloom originated from, and he sort of walks round as well. But I'll finish there on that and let Liam in.
Well, just responding to Sean's sense of our nerdiness, which is true, but the early stages when you're researching the project is one of the great pleasures of it. Because everything's possible. And so trying to shape an idea, trying to come up with something that you think is viable, is actually a great pleasure. You're knocking things around back and forward, maybe sometimes disagreeing, an idea gets pushed into another direction. But that's joyous, because once you get into the project properly, then you're in the practicalities and details, and all that has to be handled. But in the early days, there's a wonderful sense of freedom. For me, certainly, it's one of the real pleasures of the job is those early stages of trying to come up with an idea and then trying to give it a shape that you feel does it justice.
And as Liam mentioned there in practicalities, that's the dream we had. But you have to share the dream for it to become a reality. And this is where we alighted on, say, we need a producer here or someone who has connections into Europe, because we should make a confession. The title of our company is Art Over Borders. But for 10 years, we only ever went over one border from Derry across into Donegal, which was very satisfactory to us because we both do actually come from Derry, and Donegal's our hinterland, if anyone knows that geography in the northwest of Ireland. But it's Joyce, we credit and blame again, that catapulted us into 18 borders or 16 countries and borders. And we did identify, thankfully, a wonderful producer, a British lady who is actually living in Holland, Claudia Woolgar, and her company, Brave New World Productees. And Claudia came aboard after we were working on it about a year and a half, and a year before pulling the application together for the Creative Europe funding, which is what turned the dream into a reality.
And Sean, you just noted that the need to kind of, you know, take it out into the world, as it were, and you've got Claudia to help that. And I'm just wondering, what has the response been like? I know there's been a wide range of different activities and events have been taking place since 2022, and with more to come. So what type of things have been produced? What has a public response been like, do you think? And also, do you feel that you need to know Joyce in order to engage? I mean, you've got lots of big themes and big ideas. So tell me about, you know, the public that have engaged with it in whatever way.
Well, the last thing that you said about, do you need to know Joyce or does the public need to, that has rung loud that you do not at all. And probably there will be those in the audience to whatever degree went and saw the shows of our partners or the events they created and walked away and didn't think of James Joyce or Ulysses once. Projects that leap to mind for me immediately that sit on the retina and really sort of were extraordinary to witness. One in Marseille, the visual artist Gethna Miles, and immigration was their theme. And they engaged with migrants and a local theatre company and a venue in the Quartier Nord. And that audience that turned up, who were involved in the show, which had a beautiful, huge impact of an event, was extremely diverse. And then at the very opposite end of Europe, in Oulu, in North Finland, where they hold a light festival annually every year in November, and itself inspired about mental well-being to create a festivity of light in the middle of such darkness. And their theme from the Joyce was mental well-being. But we saw tens of thousands of people on the street when we visited that, and their families, because it's a family festival. But the organizers, of course, we had given them the Circe episode, Night Town, which is riotous and phantasmagoric kind of writing from Joyce. And that injected into their festival of light something quite edgy and dark that they'd never done before, and they were very thankful for that because it gave them permission to do this through the Ulysses project and test something that they wouldn't have otherwise tested on their own with their audience. So we will see where that light festival goes in future years simply because of that Ulyssesian intervention.
And can't obviously speak for audiences all the time, but in terms of ourselves, I found it both an education and also inspirational in terms of seeing the work. I'm thinking, for example, one of our partners in Cluj-Napoca in Romania, Create Act and Joy, they created a piece of immersive theatre coming out of the theme of dangers of a future Europe. And what they were exploring was the movement back and forward now between people in Romania, going to another country, living, working there for a time, coming back, and with a particular focus on women who may have families, who have children, and what that does, not just for the woman, but the families as well. So they took that, which is, you know, it's a very, very serious issue, but they did something very, very creative with it, which is true, I think, of so many of the partners. So I love that you were actually learning something about contemporary Europe, about what was going on, but you were also artistically engaged and what was happening in front of you.
So you've got a whole series of public events taking place, you know, which run until June. And you've also got a whole range of different other activities connected to the programme or part of the wider programme. And there's a book, There's a so-called charter, and also there's you're supporting emerging artists and practitioners. Can you tell us a bit about what you know, how you're supporting artists, and also maybe about the book as well?
Yeah, we wanted to create an opportunity for emerging artists to go and visit another city with no pressure on them in terms of having to, you know, we weren't commissioning work or anything like that. We were saying, go to this place, soak up the experience, engage with the public act, or indeed, in some cases, some of the emerging artists actually got involved in the production of the work. And then who knows what may come from it. As I say, there was no pressure put. Maybe 10 years down the line, a new piece of work will come out of that experience. But we knew there aren't always that many opportunities for artists to just be given that level of freedom. And the feedback we've had has been fantastic because, you know, some of them said, we've never had an opportunity like this before. So that has been, I think, a real positive. And friendships have been made as well, and connections have been made that will last way beyond this actual project.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, Liam. It's just because you conjured for me some of the conversations with some of those emerging artists of complete stunned surprise when we said to them, well, we will pay for your flight and your accommodation to Berlin or Eleusis or any city of your choice that fits your practice or takes you to a new virgin territory to develop your practice, and we will pay you a fee. And you don't have to create a work for us. We're not buying anything from you. That's it. And it reminded us, I think, of at our age, you know, several decades back when there was a kind of looser and more fertile and supportive understanding in the arts generally, where, you know, it was to develop you. Whereas today, the boxes you have to tick, the pound of flesh and what gets squeezed out of you for any artist to have to do something and evidence it. And I think that's what's stunned the young artists of today. And that has proved, you know, on the one hand, it was light-footed as the financial item within the whole big project, and it's not the big public events, but it's been one of the most rewarding things to watch and witness the young people mixing with the established companies or the audiences in these different cities that they've never had a chance to visit previously.
It goes back as well to what we said earlier about surprise. You want surprise. You don't always want to know what's going to happen. And we didn't quite know how emerging artists would respond, and it has been an absolute delight to see how much they have clearly got from it, and also how much it's a way of valuing them as well. You're saying, you know, we value what you do, we value your work as an artist, and you have this time to use as you wish. So I think that's been important as well for some of those artists, just reaffirm the value of what they're doing.
I think that sort of, in a way, also kind of mirrors Joyce going to Europe in the way that he was then able to kind of meet with art writers and artists from other cities and other countries and so on. And that would have inspired and influenced his approach to life and thinking. And I think that art for art's sake thing seems to be very, very important.
Absolutely. Yes.
I think that's hugely important. If you look at the Dublin that Joyce left, I mean, I'm speculating here to a degree, but the vast majority of people he would have met would have been born in Ireland. I would have thought a very, very small percentage of those people would ever have been in anywhere in a mainland Europe country, the continent, as I think it was called then. Some people have gone to England or Scotland for work, but that would have been it. There'd been very, very little ethnic diversity in Dublin as well. At that time. And then Joyce goes to Trieste, and there's this extraordinary mix of nationalities, all these different languages being spoken. And then, you know, you think of his time in Paris as well, where, you know, we think of Joyce as one of the great modernists, but Paris was the center of modernism. So the artist he would have been meeting, the work he was seeing, the conversations he was being had, he couldn't have written, I don't think, Ulysses in the way that he did if he'd stayed in Dublin.
Completely so. And you can't also leave out the time of the Great War. You know, he started it pretty much in 1914, finished it in 1921, published 22. And he had to leave his beloved Trieste, which he probably would have stayed in for many years of his life, because of the war, and exiled himself in Zurich, where, of course, he met many extraordinary individuals, artists and otherwise, from Lenin and others in Zurich. And this is also developmental in parallel with while he's writing this book. And it does pick up, I think, because of the time and the moment across Europe of the Great War, and then the Spanish flu and the loss of life after that in 1919, you can feel an extraordinary sensitivity for the human being, for mankind in this work. And Joyce really did passionately have this sense that he was writing something that would be a kind of instructive or helpful or supportive text that would be loved by the masses, that could be spread and engaged with. And of course, he knew all the difficulties that he fed into it from his extraordinary mind. But it is sadly a book that somehow has ended up so up on a high pedestal and removed from the general public. And that, I think, for Liam and I, really does sort of underpin this project that we're doing, that we can move off this great work that we respect, but blast it wide open into the possibilities of creating new work 100 years later for audiences right across Europe.
And also in that experience of Joyce as a young man going to Europe, you praise Joyce, you also have to praise his partner, who would become his wife, Nora Barnagall, who in some ways probably took even more of a leap of faith than he did. And if I remember rightly, when they got to Trieste at the station there, he left her sitting on a bench. He went off and tried to find somewhere to live. And I can't remember the details, whether he got in a fight or he got involved in refereeing a fight. But anyway, they went back to jail and it got sorted out. And I think it was the middle of the night before he came back to the train station to Nora, who was still waiting there. But she was, you know, an extraordinary presence right through his life. And again, you wonder what he would have managed to do without her. She was an extraordinary figure. And they both together took this extraordinary gamble to move to mainland Europe. And they never went back.
Probably in fairness to Joyce, actually, he was refereeing, I think. It was a bunch of sailors in Trieste, which was a big port then, obviously, you know, at least that's the official version. Yeah,
he was never a fighter.
No, he's a pacifist, yeah, supposedly.
So you've talked about this great sort of literary work, but you've talked about sort of, you know, bursting it open, and at the same time, and as well as supporting artists to travel across Europe, you've also commissioned some writers to create a new book. Just tell us a bit about what that's about.
Well, we invited each of the partners to choose a writer who could write about their city, could write about public space in their city, and also their contemporary theme. So someone who knew their city well and would offer a very distinct and unique take on it. And that, you know, we're starting to get the commissions through now. There's a lot of wonderful work there, and it just offers a different type of reflection on Europe today. What's interesting as well is a lot of the themes that might come out of one city, but actually they're pertinent right across Europe. We're seeing all sorts of interconnections that we again didn't realize were there, but the project has illuminated that. The other thing to mention is that the whole process of bringing partners together, of doing the application and so forth, all took place on Zoom. We were in the middle of the pandemic at the time. So all our partners, we only met through Zoom. And in a way, that's kind of quite claustrophobic. There's only sort of so much you say in those circumstances. And it was in October of 22, we actually met in person for the very first time. And that was kind of exhilarating. And the conversation sort of opened as well, and it flourished and it flowed. And that also for us, and I hope for all the partners, has been just a wonderful experience. You have to sort of, you reconsider what you think matters, what you think is valuable, what you focus on, because you see other people who are offering other perspectives. And so then that challenges your own in an incredibly healthy way. So I certainly feel absolutely changed by this project, transformed in terms of my thoughts about art and work and the relationship between art and society and so forth. It's been wonderful in that respect.
And there's been a complete paradox, to be honest, because of COVID. And in some ways you hesitate to sort of, inverted commas, thank the space of COVID because it's such a tragic time for so many. But in the arts, particularly your freelance work, it just stopped us dead in our tracks in terms of work and income. And because you get caught up, the labor intensiveness of the arts, in proportion to what you get remuneration or otherwise, is huge. And you just go from one festival one year to the next, and annually it just consumes you. And suddenly we stopped. And it was at that very moment we were kind of in the early development of the Ulysses, and we were given space just to concentrate in the mind on that one big work and not be distracted by having to deliver against various grants of, continuing the festivals that we were doing in Ireland. And I think that was how we got to really building up the project the way we did, and for it to be brought together for one single big application to the European Commission Creative Europe Fund. It was like, in darts, you would say in your first shot, you would have to hit the bullseye for this, because it was our first time applying to Creative Europe. We'd never had experience or had done it previously, but with Claudia there steering us ahead, it got the full marks and of assessment from Creative Europe and the money that it asked for to make it a reality. If they had said no, there would have been no other fund or no other mixture of compound of funds that would ever have been able to realise the complexity of this project across the length and breadth of Europe.
Finally, we're almost two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the programme. Started in August 2022. It's due to finish this year. Can you tell us a bit about what we might expect with some of the events that are taking place until June, when the YES Festival is due to take place? But if you want to just take us run through some highlights of the next few months.
Well, the next few months actually bring Act 1, Act 2 and Act 3 at the very end all together. So the Budapest Episode 4 in the Act 1 comes to its full fruition with events responding to the 24 writers and districts that they took the stories from, and they published a book to celebrate their 150th anniversary, and that's in May. And it's followed by Lugo doing a second year of their Les Dragonians food, wine and poetry and text weekend. Then we really hit Act 3 with the three cities of Lisbon, Episode 16, and Dublin, Episode 17, Ithaca, and Derry as the final episode, the YES Festival, with the theme of the future of female vision. And within 10 days at the beginning of June, you have this kind of grand finale and climax of those three episodes. And Derry in particular kind of pulls all the 18 partners, all the 18 cities send female artists to congregate in Derry. It's an all-women artist festival because it's Molly's soliloquy. It's Derry and Donegal, so it's cross-border. And we're doing a Return of Ulysses trail and so on and so forth. And it was probably the greatest surprise for us at Derry, which actually to reveal our accents if they haven't been revealed thus far, is the city we both, Liam and I, were born in and originally come from. But it is a city that has a history of a female workforce in the shirt factories. And the women really do kind of lead things there. And the world does know Derry now through even Derry Girls, for example. So we gave it the 18th episode after Dublin. And I think it's sweet as well for Joyce, where he'd around or is up there looking down on this project and his name of his book, to see that when he was writing in 1921, at the time of Derry being Ireland being divided with the Government of Ireland Act, North and South, He was acutely aware of that, and to see the whole project after 2 or 3 years come back, not just to Dublin, his city and the city of the book, but to both parts of Ireland, and it's very much a shared island finish to the whole journey of Ulysses' European Odyssey. And something extraordinary in Derry, if those who know the final episode of the Ulysses, it begins with the word yes and it ends with the word yes, and there's 90 odd yeses in between. It's so affirmative, and this is where Liam and I got a shiver when we realised, you know, we had Ithaca, episode 17 for Dublin, and had we snookered ourselves to stay in Ireland, and we realised without seeing it in front of our nose that our own home city was the 18th episode, because on the streets of Derry, people shout across to one another, yes, Charlie, yes, Mary, yes, Dolores, how are you? Instead of saying hello, they use the word yes. I don't know the origin, the peculiarity of that, and nowhere else in Ireland does that actually happen. So that, but it's a joyous sort of acclaim, you know, on the street. And again, with Ulysses, the streets and the shout on the street that Joyce writes about. So it really allows Derry to come in and for the project to really sing out on a very high note with all the partners and all the female artists across the city with a female vision. And the very last day, June the 16th, which is normally Bloomsday, that's been celebrated for the last 100 years in Dublin, going to get turned on its head when this project goes up north to be called Molly Bloom's Day. And it'll run on June the 16th, 2024, 8 a.m. to 2 the following morning, with whole sets of events transplanted and transposed to the streets of Derry and the forts across the border in Donegal, and making a festivity entirely unique and new, and one we hope with that, you know, the lovers of Joyce and Ulysses in Dublin will just depart Dublin and head up the four-hour trip across the border to Derry for possibly one of the biggest celebrations of Ulysses that has ever taken place.